Hello and welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your constantly evolving subscribers-only playlist of music news and criticism. I'm your host, Joe Coscarelli, sitting in for John Caramonica. I'm starting out my day with a blunt of paint. No pancakes, just a cup of syrup. Baking soda pot and a silver fork. You already know it's time to go to work. I'm back up in the kitchen working with a chicken. You get 63 grams for like 1250. 50 pounds of perk, 50 pounds of midget. As soon as it's gone, I sell another 60. My baby needs some shoes, my auntie need a purse. Summer coming real soon, so I need a burp. I hop up out that van with that duffel bag. And if a try me, I'ma bust his ass. That, of course, was Gucci Mane and Zaytoven's First Day Out from the Writing on the Wall mixtape. I'm joined today by Kenneth J. Montgomery, Brooklyn criminal defense attorney and civil rights litigator, deeply interesting man with a few lifetimes of experiences in New York, in the courtroom, and in and around the music business. Ken, how are you doing?
Thanks for being with us. Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Joe.
So I first met Ken a few years ago when I was covering the brief but action-packed career of Bobby Shmurda, the young Brooklyn rapper, threw his hat in the air, had a hit song, did a little dance, you know, basically was becoming a star before getting arrested by the NYPD in a gang sting. After a protracted legal battle, he's currently serving, I think, seven-ish years in prison after a plea deal. Ken, you represented Bobby early on.
I represented him early. I think I was the second attorney.
He went through a few lawyers.
He went through three altogether. I actually just saw Leslie, his mother, the other day, and we had a great conversation. A lot of people don't know he could have gotten this significantly less time, but he was a 19, 20-year-old kid. Yep. Who had a lot of challenges to figure things out.
And I remember when he took that plea deal, yeah. You know, he tried to take it back.
The mother who I spoke to, who I like a lot, Leslie, she actually saw me one day and she apologized because she said his head wasn't clear, right. And he had an opportunity to come home a lot sooner.
So we'll come back. Yeah. I think we'll talk about Bobby. But Ken, you and I got back in touch last week after I published a story on a different attorney. Mm-hmm. Drew Findling is a man known sort of in and around Atlanta and now the internet as the billion-dollar lawyer, hashtag billion-dollar lawyer. It's good branding.
It's a great brand.
This is a guy who has gained some renown in the world of hip-hop for representing Gucci Mane. He got him out of jail, you know, a few years ago to sort of start this rebirth we've seen. He represented Waka Flocka Flame, members of Migos, especially Offset, in criminal cases. Yeah. I wrote a little character portrait of this guy, his sort of unlikely life as a rap world fringe player. He's become pretty close with a lot of these mm-hmm. guys, you know, in speaking to them, they call him mentor, father figure, that sort of thing. So that's led him to engage with some bigger issues, mass incarceration, mm-hmm. the probation system, stuff that you and I have mm-hmm. talked about and I know that are an important part of your career. So that's why you're here, to sort of use this as a jumping off
Absolutely.
Point to get a little deeper on this topic. So maybe we start with a little background on you. You can tell our listeners who you are and where you came from and what you do.
I grew up at a time where New York was really bad, and I somehow survived, I think, because of luck in a lot of regards, and parents who were there for me. I graduated law school, and I was a prosecutor for 5 years, roughly almost 5 years.
What neighborhood did you grow up in?
I grew up in Brownsville in Crown Heights. I went to school there. Went to school in Manhattan. I actually went to high school with several rappers, Rex in Effect and Biggs, one of the partners in yep. Rockefeller, were yep. also
Kareem Burke
at Martin Luther King High School. And after I finished in DA's office, I started my practice. And I've been doing federal and state criminal defense, everything from terrorism to murder to drugs and you name it. But I also have done a significant amount of stuff in the music industry, from childhood friends from Smith & Wesson and Sean Price and Helter Skelter and bunch of different Duck Down Records and other artists, you know, that I've grown up with, who've gotten into the industry as well. sued some entertainment companies.
Right, that's part of the job too.
Yeah, that was part of my job. But I've spent a significant amount of time in a courtroom.
And you're a fan and a student, I love
music and I love hip hop. And I grew up on it.
Ken has some great appearances on the Combat Jack show.
Great good friend of mine.
Tax Stone podcast as well. You're someone who understands this world and sort of the intersection of where it meets the other part
of
your life.
Very interesting genre and culture.
So when my story came out about Drew, you know, I saw you tweeting about it and you were saying that it was a pretty loaded.
I think I said exactly is a lot to unpack in the story.
Let's unpack that a little bit. What were the issues that jumped out in you from covering this subject?
For me, I thought it was funny because when I tweeted and I looked and I was like, oh, I know this guy. He's a good writer, bright guy.
thank you.
I thought it, you know, we're in America. So obviously the history of America and entertainment with black men is very storied. In that story, I saw race. I saw class. I saw culture. I saw entertainment. I saw celebrity culture. It was a lot, and it was very interesting.
And you were saying something to me, and you know, you had a bit of a conversation on your Facebook page with people you know about this. Talk a little bit about the sort of class dynamics that you see in terms of, you know, young rappers, frequently young black men, and their sort of reliance on people taking care of them as they enter the business.
Absolutely. I've seen it firsthand growing up, and to me, it was less about the attorney. I mean, I actually know people who know the attorney and they say he does great work, but it was more about something that's been persistent in black culture for a very long time, and that we find value in those and institutions outside of our community. And I think I had said to you, you know, where's the story of the black lawyer who has all the white entertainers raving about them.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's something of a status symbol?
Absolutely. Definitely the validity. I must have made it since I have this guy as my attorney because he's an insider. He's someone who's special. Mm-hmm. You know, I've arrived and I've made it. And it's pretty clear that that's something that's always been going on in our communities. And I think that's from, we don't really get to control the resources. We have the talent. We have the unique ability. You know, when Bobby threw his hat in the air, the person who decided that whether that was going to be a hit and signed a check was probably an older white male in the 70s, probably.
You're not going to give L.A. Reid the credit for
that? No, I'm not. I think L.A. was the liaison to it, maybe. But no, I think the person who makes the final determination is usually someone who is so far removed from your community that they really don't understand it, but they know it has some value.
And of course, this has been a trope in hip hop going back
forever.
The Jewish lawyer.
Forever.
There's a mega mix on YouTube
it's not just even in the music. I've had parents of people tell me, you know, they needed a Jewish lawyer. Regardless of what I've been able to do or what my track record is, it's just in the American way, in the history of white supremacy, in the history of social, political, economic, academic alienation, that's just been something that's been persistent.
Something that came up while I was reporting this story is this idea that in the South, that it was good for them to have somebody who could sort of code switch like this. You know, you have a guy who grew up on Long Island, who moved to Georgia for college, works in Atlanta, you know, progressive city, whatever. Mm-hmm. But when the Migos get caught in small town Georgia, he felt that for him to be able to come in there and advocate for them in this way, to speak to, you know, his fellow white people,
essentially,
that's a boon.
So, and there's a premium for that, and there's a culture for that. And we unfortunately believe in that sometimes way too often. Listen, I know great white attorneys. I know horrible white attorneys. I know great black attorneys. I know horrible black attorneys. It's person specific.
Right.
But unfortunately, that's just something that permeates through black culture all the way to the point where, you know, who's the most powerful black entertainer? Who would it be? Jay-Z?
Beyonce and Jay.
Do they green light artists, or do they really green light the culture, or do they have a symbiotic relationship with the guys who kind of control it and they are the darlings of it? I'll say this, people may not even agree, but they're replaceable as well. It's just waiting for the next starlet or waiting for the next guy to come along. Because I think corporations and society, we're in this weird space where entertainment is unfortunately the foundation of education. And they realize the power of it. That's not changing anytime soon. So, you know, you get people and personalities to help lead the culture. I just got some brand new shrimp. So you want to talk? Hit on your mouth. You want to see my black right in front of your house? With some shmurders in the flag wrapped around my mouth. I ain't come to talk, I came to bang it out. Just call them things up they back and bought them, shoot them. Shoot them. The ones he disrespect is like I gotta do them. I'm headed to your block. To your block. Just to unload all these glocks. All these glocks. My AR hold 30 shots. 30 shots. That's worth the cane, that's worth the hot. F-O-G-L-O-P. I'm headed by many. So I got to keep the semi. For cocaine, we pull out Henny. Cause for cocaine, we dish out plenty.
So that was Computers by Rowdy Rebel and Bobby Shmurda. To sort of flip from the legal side to the artist side, like I think another through line of my piece and my reporting, and I think when we look at, you know, hip hop in general right now, is you hear a lot about these young men being targeted, being targets for being famous. And I think this is something that maybe you saw a little bit with the Bobby Shmurda case where, you know, he was on the rise. It seemed like the police had been looking at him and his friends before he took off.
Well, that warrant definitely was going on before.
Right. But in general, do you feel like it is fair to say that young black entertainers have a target on them?
I think it's fair to say young black men in general have a target on them.
Right.
I think when you add the entertainment thing to it, it raises it in some regard. But in others, it can be a shield. In some ways, it can be a sword. I think what happens is that what's interesting to me, and this is from a personal standpoint, is that the issues that the artist who's coming from a Brownsville or 90s or East New York, that artist is going through prior to being a star, are much more layered before they get there. Then when they get there, they don't build a roadmap as to the transcending and the commonalities. When they get there, all of a sudden their opinion changes. But, you know, my thing is that that's not the standard. Mm-hmm. The standard is the, you know, go down to 120 Skimmerhorn or 100 and Center Street. The standard is that these issues that you talk about are going on every single day.
Right.
So your story becomes very personal, and that's okay, and that's fine, that's art. But it sometimes misses the point of what's really going on in the community.
But I am interested also in this sort of in-between zone, which I think is what we found with Bobby, and what when I talked to sort of some music executives about why someone like Drew Findling is important to them, what came up repeatedly was basically you want rappers who seem quote-unquote authentic, right? To get that.
So is that why we got the guns in the video and stuff like that?
I mean, so then when you have someone who gets picked to have a shot at stardom, they're sort of in this in-between zone. And this is something, you know, I've talked to rappers about. It's sort of like you're transitioning from one life to another and you want to be safer, but maybe you have old cases. Maybe you have probation. Maybe you didn't get the best representation at certain points to your career. So there's a lot of unwinding
you have
to do.
But see, it's weird though, Joe, because, all right, you take a group of young men who come from historically disenfranchised communities, poverty, violence, and their dysfunction, violence, poverty is now commodified and sold. And as you said, the exec, whatever their color is like, wow, we need that. That's authentic. They're not attempting to box that up. They're attempting to make sure it survives long enough just so that they can put that product out. What they don't see is, do you understand what's happened in that young kid's life? Do you understand that the father is not there? That there's been this vicious cycle where the father was in the streets and the father is dead or may have been addicted to drugs or depressed? Do you see the same thing happening with the mother? You think he's authentic because of that. You think he's authentic because all of his friends in the neighborhood now are like, yo, you made it. And they're going to come along. So now this young kid has to think to himself, do I keep it sincere and keep my friends with me? How do I navigate with this?
Right.
How could someone possibly who's not from that community come and make that okay? What are they going to do to make that okay? Are they going to go like Superman did in a movie and fly around the world and get to the point where it all started and fix it? So, you know, it's not, you know, I don't think anyone can fix that dysfunction. And it kind of spills out however it spills out.
Are there artists you look at, though, and you commend the transition they made? I think of someone like a 21 Savage, you know, who you see his early interviews and he's talking about all the people he's lost in his life, all the schools he was kicked out of, all the horrible things he's gone through. And then he seemingly has stayed out of trouble.
It seems that way. Like, I'm not as much familiar with him, but I think there's definitely successful people and places and entities that look to. You look at the TDE operation. You got a bunch of kids from different parts of California, from rough areas, and they seem to be very sold on the culture of what their company represents, TDE. Those guys are Black guys from community. One of the most successful songs on the latest album from Kendrick is about how the leader of TDE and his father met in a store where it could have went really bad and changed the course of both of their lives.
Let's listen to a little bit of that. That's Duckworth, right?
Yeah,
the last
Duckworth,
track.
Yeah,
on,
that was one of
them.
Yeah. See, at this chicken spot, there was a light skin that talked a lot with a curly top and a gap in his teeth. He worked the window. His name was Ducky. He came from the streets to Robert Taylor home, Southside Project, Chirac, the Terror Dome. Drove to California with a woman on him and $500. They had a son hoping that he'd see college, hustling on the side with a 9-to-5 to freak it. Cadillac severely ride his son around on weekends. Three-piece special with his name on his shirt pocket. Cross the street from the projects, Anthony Plant the Robin. Stuck up the place before, back in 84. That's when affiliation was really 8 years of war. So many relatives telling us, selling us, devilish work, scaling us. Crime, intelligence, felonious, prevalent proposition with nines. Ducky was well aware, they robbed the manager and shot a customer last year. He figured he'd get on these good sides. Free chicken every time Anthony posted in line. Two extra biscuits, Anthony liked them and then let them slide. They didn't kill him. In fact, it looked like they're the last to survive. Pay attention, that one decision changed both of their lives. One curse at a time.
So, Ken, you were talking about how Kendrick is potentially a shining example in this. Like, when you look at the rap landscape right now and you see a lot of these kids coming up with cases, you know, some of them pretty upsetting stuff to look at. Yeah. Kodak Black, who's facing a sexual assault.
Friend of mine is his attorney.
XXXTentacion, who, you know, is accused of
domestic
breeding
violence.
A pregnant woman. Domestic violence. Tay-K, who has this...
A case who he...
Multiple murder charges.
Violence,
When you see these kids coming up, and sometimes it feels like those records are a boon almost to their early career, and yet they're being prevented from following the path of their art.
Well,
what do you do with that?
The problem is that if our art is going to perpetually stay in the space of dysfunction is art, and there's no real perspective on how we got there, then you're always going to be in that weird space. You know, you can't have it both ways. We are in the most powerful nation in modernity with a legal system that is superbly prepared to deal with criminality. Whether music is involved or whatever is involved. It's interesting that you say that because I see on social media sometimes it'll be like a hashtag, free the boy, free this, free that. And it's like, damn, you have real political prisoners in this country who've done things to help sustain the culture, and we don't even have any concept of who these people are. But then the moment a record comes out that we are entertained by, we automatically go to that space. And my thing is, there has to be some social, familial, community institutions in place to address that before these young men become commodified. And here's a question that no one asked. Why is that story so entertaining still in 2018 when we know what mass incarceration does? We know how many people have been killed senselessly. What is it about that culture that Americans, globally, what about that white, Hispanic, Black, Asian, brown kids all across the globe love that narrative of the young, Black, dangerous guy? Like, why are we still so enthused by that? Why? And I think when we start really asking that question of why, is because everybody benefits off of that except those people who generate it.
When you look at someone like Meek Mill, you know, who was on a parole violation, he's doing 2 to 4 years basically the background is, you know, at 19, he's convicted on drug and gun charges, served 8 months, and now he's 30 years old and he's been on
probation
ever since. You have people sort of standing up and saying, you have Jay-Z writing an op-ed in this newspaper, you know, saying that this isn't okay and that he can be an example to show, you know, that the parole system, and Drew Findling says it in my article, you know, it's modern day shackles, that this is a broken system. Do you feel like cases like this can illuminate important causes in that way?
I think if used properly in a system that's based on media so much and visualization, I think we have to be careful, though, in that way too many of us believe that you can only be educated through that lens.
And through the lens of celebrity.
Celebrity. And I think the real work that needs to get done has nothing to do with the celebrity. It's, you know, you need to get on the ground with those teachers and those social workers and those lawyers in the courts every day and those grandmothers who had to bury 4 or 5 sons and now they're burying grandchildren. And you need to start talking to them, because putting a movie out or writing a book or getting on the soapbox, it doesn't really address that, you know. And my concern is that those examples, they cloud the direction of where we really should be looking at what the root of this problem is. Because you know what? Ultimately, Meek Mill is going to be okay. He's not going to be putting out any music right now, but he's going to be okay because he has a community now of, they're not blood, but they're a community of players in corporate and entertainment world who are fighting for him. But how about if we fix the thing so that you don't have those Meek Mills in that position anymore? But I don't know where our energies are towards that.
Let's listen to a little bit of Meek. We Ball. We'll let him have a moment.
Great here. Artist.
Truth. When they kill my Snoop, I see my yard in the casket. Ain't even had no blood in him. Probably the reason why I keep taking these drugs. All these drugs. Ain't got no patience. No patience. I watch everybody change. They thought I lost it. They did. But now they all busting U's. It's gonna cost me. They is. I seen Chino shut the casket on the coffin. Truth. Killed his only big brother and we lost him. So I'ma hold it down till we all win. We been at the Clearport balling. I just wanna see my flossing. 100 bands every time I walk in. If you keep it trilling, get a blessing for it. Blessing for it. He down in the trenches with that Western on me. Western on me. My mama, she can't sleep, I come here early mornings. Mama. But mama, I got 30 and it's 30, 40. And you have been fun, they give me shine out price, shine out price. Used to pray them ramen noodles, turn to lobster, turn to lobster. Gotta watch my own homies on the roster. Gotta watch, cause this the type of money get your lined up. And I can't trust nobody. They ain't your homie and they not the soul. They said that they were riding down.
So when you look at this sort of intersection of, you know, hip hop and criminality, or the idea of criminality, how have you seen this phenomenon develop? Do you feel like it's always been this way in hip hop, or are we at a particular moment where, magnified by social media and conversations swirling around Black Lives Matter and mass incarceration, how is that all playing?
I think it's both, Joe. I remember as a young kid growing up on hip hop where people outside of the community just looked strangely at it, and they didn't know what it was. I also grew up and developed at a time. I was that guy who Hillary Clinton, they say, talked about, you know, the super predator kid. I grew up in that era. It's interesting that at this point in time, hip-hop has become the personification of Black manhood. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I think it's more bad than anything else. When it's put in that position of that is Black manhood, it paints race and males and Black males in a very precarious, and puts us in a very precarious position. So in one regard, you know, look, I grew up listening to, you had people like Kool G Rap, you had people like N.W.A. came along, and Tusha, all these different things came along. But what was a little bit different was there was a lot more diversity. If that makes sense, like some of the biggest gangsters I grew up with listen to Tribe. They listen to these different artists. It seems as now, because it's such a focus on money and social media, And this black male criminal narrative is even stronger now that the music isn't diversified on the major platforms anymore. And it's almost like a dog wagging its tail. What's interesting is that most of the artists now that are gathering attention, they weren't A&R'd. They weren't in the clubs.
They're jumping right out of the screen. Yeah.
You know, and some of them are great or really talented. You have dudes like ASAP in them and doing all these great things, but it's weird because what's leading the culture? And I'm not so sure anything is leading it other than money and celebrity culture.
And you don't sound very sympathetic to this idea of, you know, that shining is inherently political in terms of this when they say, look where I come from and look where I am now.
Because if your platform is, if you're going to just say, yo, I made it and that's political in of itself and I got money. No, man, like you're replaceable then because you're not adding anything. You're not giving any nuances or you're not creating or peeling back the layers. And the problem that black males have had in this country historically in Western culture is that we're not presented as complicated human beings. So now when you have the guys who have all the money, who wear the fur coats to the Super Bowl and the NBA, and they got their beautiful woman, and all they say is political statements that have been curated by their PR or whoever, it's like that's not real. That's corporate. And they're no different than we talk about Uncle Toms and Coons. You know, we make fun of the funny talking black guy who only hangs out with his white friends, who's a hedge fund guy. But they're no different than that guy because they're still aspiring to the same thing, which is capitalism, nationalism, entertainment, all mixed up in one. Who are you at the core? What are you bringing to the nuances of your community where somehow after generation, the same thing keeps happening? So all that money you guys making, all these artists, not anything has changed on the bottom level. So what are we doing?
What do you see in Brooklyn that makes you hopeful when you're among these communities?
I think what I'm seeing, we do a mentoring program in Brownsville at Mott Hall Bridges Academy, and it's a real intergenerational group. I think I was talking to you about these kids in there from 8 to 21. What I'm seeing is that these young people are bright and they just need perspective. And the more perspective that they can be provided, then the more that they can look at this at a different lens. Because if they can only see it in the lens that I have or someone else have, then things aren't going to change. And I think these young people are seeing it in a different lens. I think you can't underestimate them because of their age. I think they're seeing so much visually and they're feeling so many things that I think they're going to be more innovative. And I think there's a possibility that you're going to see generations of people who are a lot more innovative and a lot more creative and a lot less reliant on the platform that the system just gives them.
When you work with someone like Bobby Shmurda, you know, for the time that you did, what did that tell you about where the music industry is these days with regards to how potentially disposable these artists
are? It's like comparable to the stock market, like crash and burn. Like, you know, you get paid off of shorting the stocks. Like, you just want to get in and get it as fast as you can and then move on to the next. But what was interesting about Bobby and Rowdy and those guys was I've been around them, not with them, but I've been in environments where I saw them before it really popped and they were like on their way and they're genuine stars.
Right. You could see the star
power. I can see why people would like them. They had a lot of personality. But what was missing, and it was a microcosm of the black community, which kind of fits back to your article a bit, is that there was no mentorship. Listen, rich, wealthy white kids, they make it because their parents open doors and cultivate and nurture. These young kids were like nomads. You know, they were really young, really bright, and they've been surviving in horrible conditions for a long time, and they weren't receptive to anyone telling them anything. And they probably didn't trust anyone. Lawyer, music exec, judge, A&R, anyone. And that's a tough order to fill. And I think that was the difficulty in what they were doing.
That's a damn my hood. I'm the first prince in my hood now.
The only little Zorilla.
Yeah. S.O.G.
On my knees shooting crops.
That's a damn my hood. selling peas out the trap.
That's a damn
hood. We gon' be in the trap.
And we living good.
Trying to make it with this rap.
And get out the hood.
You know we gon' win. Yeah, yeah. We do not lose.
Probably lost my last name. 12 boy over last week said this my last time.
Draco's in 40 stacked up. Last night we matched up.
We gone on the move, they say he got pounds. But guess what, we take him down. Marcus in the hood trying to say I run the game. Looking how I used to fall for it. Telling hoes they gon' take my chain. Going dirt on my name.
You were just listening to Sherwood Marty, Day in My Hood, featuring Lil Baby. Now, do you think hip-hop benefits from having black executives on the ground level? You mentioned TDE, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, TDE is a great example of Kendrick seemingly having the mentorship of mm-hmm. a Top Dog mm-hmm. and Punch and people, mm-hmm. you know, they're a close-knit team and they come from similar places. Now, in Atlanta, you have something similar. I did a story.
Coach K.
Yeah, so I did a story mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago, you know, a couple months ago now at this point, affiliated with the Drew Findling world, mm-hmm. Amigos. Quality Control mm-hmm. is Coach K, who formerly Gucci's manager, mm-hmm. formerly Young Jeezy, Pastor Troy of that era. Mm-hmm. And then his partner, Pierre Thomas, mm-hmm. who, you know, is a guy born yep. and bred Atlanta. He's from mm-hmm. the streets. He's, you know, not shy about that. And now their game is sort of taking kids in Atlanta who they see that star power potential in and trying to bring them to the other side, to the safer money, you know, from the drugs to the music, basically. And you know, they have relationships with major labels mm-hmm. and they have this system, but they have a sort of farm league where they can try and develop artists and they have a studio, you know, it's very regimented, mm-hmm. you know, there's no funny business allowed there. And, you know, they allow people to come and record for free and to sort of build these little pockets of hope. Like, do you see that as potentially working?
I think that's has a lot of potential, because essentially what that sounds like is that you're building something. It's community building. It's in the face of entertainment or the filter of entertainment, but you're building a community. Now, as long as through that journey you are practicing accountability and self-determination and there's an educational process that goes beyond music, then I think it has incredible potential. The thing is that if you look at these young kids who are really bright, it seems like the nature of the music business, even for the black execs that do well, is that they take on the adage that somebody has to get screwed and it's not going to be me. That's the nature of our business. If we can have less of that and more of this communal thing, I think you'll see less and less kids getting into trouble from the criminal side. And I think you'll see kids, you know, people perform well when they feel comfortable, when they don't have a lot to worry about. When people are worried, sometimes that impacts their decision making, sometimes good, sometimes bad. But I do think that nurturing is a good thing as long as everybody is honest and it's truth to power. It's a goal. Those guys have challenges, too, because, you know, some of these young men, they come from really difficult places. You may need a psychologist. You may need a therapist to deal with trauma. You got some kids who,
right? A mentor isn't enough.
Five of their friends have been killed.
Right.
So you telling him you should be happy that you're not there anymore and you survive. Whoa! What are you really telling this kid?
Right.
So
PTSD needs to be addressed.
It's sincere. You know, I see it every day. I see it in grown men. I see it in young people. But what's really scary is that hip hop and entertainment has been so embedded in us as a culture that I see, and I kid you not, I know 40-year-old men who want to rap. Sitting in jail, they got a book of rhymes and they're going to come home and they're going to rap. And that's where I go back to, it's a personification of our manhood, good or bad, but it makes sense to me because our plight and story here, once it's always been intriguing. Whether you've David Walker or Frederick Douglass touring the country where people want to hang you on trees mm-hmm. to you're Malcolm or Stokely or H. Rap Brown. The rap thing is just an extension of that. You can create a timeline and put rap in there somewhere. And I guess until we get to really control our narrative from a very safe place, it's always going to be kind of compromised and manipulated a bit.
life. I wonder, will it take me under? I don't know. Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue Bahama waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing. Fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people holding dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time, watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be, if you could be mine, we both shine.
If I rule the world,
still living for today. In these last days, until it is me.
So Ken, tell me what you see when you look at sort of what is now the elder statesman class of hip hop. These guys who, you know, about your age, right?
Mm-hmm. Some moguls,
the moguls. Your Jays, your Steve Stouts, your, you know, Nas to some extent, though he hasn't gotten as much into mm-hmm. the exact.
I like
side
what Nas
things,
is doing though, from the business standpoint. You know, he's definitely seemed like he's he's paired with mass appeal.
Yeah.
Peter Bittender people with money and his other guy, venture capitalist guy. And, you know, he looks great, you know. It looks great. You know, it's funny because I was looking at the, there's a picture, I guess it was a Rock Nation Grammy party
mm-hmm.
with basically all those guys except Nas
right.
was there. And it's
he had
it's,
a VC meeting.
Yeah.
Or something.
You know, Uber or something. But I'm looking at it and I'm like, it was a powerful picture in so many regards because so many of our young people look to those guys as the vehicles of success. And I try to tell these young people when in the federal in MDC and MCC, which are federal jails here in New York or Rikers Island or the Tombs, I try to tell these young men that they have a better shot at becoming a nuclear physicist or a doctor or engineer or architect than they do at that.
At being in that photo.
Yes. Or even being in that place. That place is when you look at, you know, you think the numbers of the NBA are small or the numbers of NFL are small. What are the numbers on becoming a black female R&B artist or a rap mogul in the vein of Puffy, 50, or Jay-Z? Like, and I'm like, damn, this is a powerful picture, but so many of our young people are hypnotized by that picture. But then it seems as though these guys only talk about themselves or what they have done, and they seem to have the most access and power in the community, at least from a celebrity culture standpoint. But these kids don't never see those guys, and they don't see, besides celebrating them, what is this about? And it's just weird in that rap, and to me, in hip hop, has lost its revolutionary angle, and that, you know, every generation got to take part or blame in that. And I think it's a reason for that. But then you think back and I look, I'm like, wow, hold on. You have all these social media. Listen, the Russians can manipulate through Facebook the elections. But we have the capability from a social media standpoint and all these tools. And none of these guys with this power and with this thing is willing to just buck the system and do something totally different to increase their brand. It seems to me like if you really show that, listen, you're about self-empowerment and going to the source, you're already adulated over. You're just going to get adulated over more. So what is it really about?
I mean, it's also, on the other hand, probably a lot for any one man to handle, right?
It
when
is.
You look at Kendrick and people mm-hmm. want to project this mm-hmm. idea of a revolutionary mm-hmm. onto him, and he's like, I also want to make an album for Disney perform at the college
absolutely.
Halftime show without anybody.
But you know what?
Bothering
me. And it's growing because listen, you got a young dude like Kendrick, you got Absol and Schoolboy and A Crew. When you look at their visuals, you can tell they're definitely responding
mm-hmm.
and they're doing their version of this stuff. But I just often wonder are we here to just adulate over these guys and make them martyrs or make them civil rights leaders? Or is it just simply art in the marketplace of ideas that should be criticized or liked and then move on? But I'm just wondering, because it's such a focal point, what's the real value later on? Because all art isn't good, you know. Some art, when I say isn't good, I don't mean it's not successful financially. I'm just wondering where it's going to go years from now. Because I've had interns at some of the best black colleges in the country who say all the males in their school want to be rappers. Mm. So it's like that's our level of success. I don't know how comfortable I am with that.
Now, what about for a kid who has the once in a generation talent, mm-hmm. you know, who has the love for the art, mm-hmm. who has found themselves, you know, I'm thinking of a Kodak, you mm-hmm. know, someone mm-hmm. like this.
I heard he's really talented.
Who is extremely talented. Mm-hmm. You listen to his music. He's often dealing with these issues mm-hmm. in the music, right? He's saying, this is how I grew up. I wish I could change. I mm-hmm. can't get off the block. You know, mm-hmm. these mm-hmm. sorts of ideas. And, you know, he's sitting in jail right now. If you were called in to go meet with somebody like that mm-hmm. and, you know, they have a career ahead of them, if they can get on something resembling a straighter path, what do you say to someone
I'm speaking.
Or Bobby when he gets out in 3 years.
Listen, I actually told Bobby's mom. I said, Bobby's going to have a shot when he comes home. He really has to surround himself with like-minded people. He has to inform himself. And he got to put in some discipline, and he's going to have to make some grown man decisions and not just be a follower of the wave. You know, what's funny is I represent the young men who have the reputation as the killers in the street, the real bad guys.
Right.
And what I've noticed is, and I could say it in a couple of parts, I know the older guys, 30s to 50s, who have a lot of respect, who these guys rhyme about. Yo, they never brag about any of that stuff. They are still dealing with accepting the fact that when they thought they were the predator or they had to be the predator in this violent fishbowl, they later realized that they were just the prey in our society. And they're still dealing with that. Most of those guys who they're rhyming about, who supposedly are these real tough killer guys, they want to do everything they can to avoid any young people walking in that direction. What I find in representing the younger people who said, forget this rap thing, I'm going to go straight to the streets, I'm going to do it better than anyone else have done it. What I'm finding is that those young people are, a lot of them are really bright, but they have no hope. And things have never gone right. And they're used to things not going right. But what I found is that you'll lose those people when you start pretending and lying to them. If you're honest with them and you speak matter-of-factly and you can relate to the historical things where to show them that they're not going through anything differently than their dad or their father, but they have an opportunity to empower themselves and make a you know, you're only as powerful as that discipline you have for yourself. That is your power. And to make better choices, then they start, their mind starts opening up a bit. You know, even someone like what I thought Taxstone made Taxstone so great was that Taxstone was a vehicle. You know, you had people who were getting PhDs mm-hmm. and you had dudes who were getting PhD in federal prison who equally liked him. And that was what was unique about his brand, I think. And why so many people were concerned when he's now in this situation.
Right. And you're representing
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I represent him.
He's a Triav
yes,
incident from yeah. Irving Plaza.
Yep. And he's bright.
I mean, his podcast was
very, yeah. very bright guy. And
was very clear-minded. You
very
know,
clear-minded.
Of this is where I came from. This is where I am. Going, this is where I'm going.
This is where I'm going. This is what this thing is about. And you have those young men out there, but what has to be built is, like I said, institutions or systems within the community. If everyone runs from the hood and that's their success, then there will never be a place where people can be nurtured. And those are the things that need to happen. We need those people who have these experiences, who've been through these things and these perspectives to help create an environment of education and nurturing. And that's what's missing. You know, I don't have all the answers, brother. It's a really difficult task. And being in the criminal side of things, I'm front and center of all the complexities of it all. And it becomes very difficult to deal with some days. But I think it can be done. I still have hope. But it's going to require a lot of innovation. And it's going to require a lot of reflection and action, which I don't think we're comfortable yet because we're still too busy entertaining.
Well, on that note, thank you, Cam Montgomery, for being with us. Let's listen to a little Bobby Shmurda Hot Boy to go out.
Jello Beats, holla at me.
And chewy on some hot. Like I talk to Shicey when I like you seen him twirl, then he drops. And we keep them to my block. And Monte keep it on him, he done drop.
Thank you for listening. This is the New York Times Popcast. You can look at every Popcast ever, nytimes.com/popcast. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your audio content. Email us any comments, questions, podcast@nytimes.com. Our producer is Pedro Rosado of Headstepper Media, and we'll be back next week.
Shorty like the way that I ball out. I be getting money, time fall out. You talking cash, dog, I goes all out. Shorty love the way that I floss out.